You're listening to Free City Radio. This is edition 259. I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks for tuning in. On the broadcast today, I am going to be featuring a conversation that I had with Philadelphia-based artist Eric Ruin. Eric is a member of the Just Seeds Artist Cooperative. That's a network of artists across North America that I've featured before on the broadcast. You can find out more info about that project at justseeds.org. Eric and I talk about the work that he does in this particular moment. Eric has done quite a few very powerful pieces speaking about Palestine. But also, we look at the local and the global. Eric talks about work that he did in Philadelphia to support a coalition of community groups to save public libraries. And Eric produced a zine about that, which we discuss. It's a beautiful art object, and also with a very strong message of the power of community organizing. So I'll let the conversation speak for itself, but I was really happy to speak with Eric for the program here on Free City Radio. So here is my conversation with Eric Ruin.
Yeah, so as far as introduction, it's always like difficult to sum oneself up, right? You know, you see, I'm from Michigan originally, from outside of Detroit. I've lived here in Philadelphia for off and on since 2007. So for quite a long time now. I feel very well rooted here, and particularly in my neighborhood of West Philadelphia. You know, I have a lot of different intersecting practices, you know, so I work as a printmaker doing mostly silkscreen works, a lot of which are based on original paper cuts. I also make sort of what might have been at one point shadow puppetry, and now I just kind of think of as like projection performance or paper cut based performance. Do some artist books is like a big part of my, which I'm sure we'll talk about, as again, it's a big part of my practice these days. It is actually a big engine for keeping everything else afloat. And I think I tend to have like a little bit, I think this is a little nebulous to other people from the outside, but I think for me internally, I tend to have like my movement work, right? Which I do like in alliance with people, sometimes for pay, sometimes as a volunteer, as a part of social movements. And then I will make graphics for people or organize publications, things like that. And then I have my own interests as an independent artist, which often deal with history, often deal with other things like that. And sometimes can get quite abstract in certain ways. Like I have a performance practice working with improvised musicians and poets and other folks that can sometimes kind of range far afield. I always feel like it's informed by the same things, which to me is a big focus on, yeah, sort of the legacy of ideas, the primacy of empathy as terms of motivating a politic. You know, I think I sometimes have this, like, idea of, like, you know, I'm really interested in kind of really traditional romantic ideas in some ways, like empathy and beauty and the beauty of the spirit. I think one of my central themes has always been the political dimensions of loneliness and the power of longing. Those are really, really central to my work. And what shape it takes really often varies from project to project, and depends sometimes on the needs of the project and sometimes on my own needs, either to, you know, pay the bills or to just vary what I'm doing. Or sometimes like my hand is busted from paper cutting and I need to edit video.
Eric, thanks for some context on what you do. One thing that strikes me about your practice, and I want to get into some of the work that draws on, you know, telling stories that relate to the themes that you addressed. And I think maybe this could also point in that direction, which is that you have done a lot of projects that profoundly link the local to the global. I'm thinking of your work around libraries. I'm thinking about your work around Palestine. And maybe on a quick take, a local library and what's happening in Gaza seem quite far away. And although it might seem obvious to some that, you know, social justice locally equals justice globally in some ways, if we want to use sort of a phrase,
translating the layers and complexities of that and sort of embodying that through an artistic practice is not simple. Some people choose to like really zero in and focus on maybe, you know, one voicing one struggle, for example, or really telling the story of one community. And I know that you take significant amounts of time to develop projects over a period, right? And really invest in that. But those projects haven't really been just to tell one story. It often feels to me in your work that there's an interconnection that is inherent, like a pointing towards a building of understanding across different experiences, to put it simply. If you could share some thoughts about that.
Yeah, I mean, in the examples that you use, like libraries and Palestine, right? Like, to me, like, the obvious through line there is enclosure, right? You know, you look at, like, the library as a commons. It's one of the last free spaces that are available to most people, especially in the U.S., that's non-commercial, right? And the attempts to defund those institutions and strip them of resources really, to me, is like a reinscription of the enclosure of the commons, and that's the lens through which I look at that work. And similarly, we can look at like Palestine. It's a straight up land grab, right? It's like people taking land for their own profit to extract from it, to resettle it, to move their own people into it, and to profit off of it. So to me, I'm deeply interested in, you know, contesting the very notion of private property, right? I think that's really central. And I think this enclosure and this constant move to privatization, you know, is like one of these things. It's like it's almost like the original sin in some senses of contemporary society, I think, you know, and you see it continuing to this day. Like I'm here in West Philadelphia, you know, in a part of West Philadelphia, Southwest Philly, King's Essing. It's traditionally been for quite some time now, a working class black neighborhood primarily, with a heavy immigrant population, and right on my corner, they're building luxury housing, like kitty corner from where I currently live. You know, and you walk around these cities, and they're all putting up these gray boxes everywhere. You know, and you just see, you're like having to cross the sidewalk because the sidewalk is no longer even available to you, right? Like the way you navigate the space is being shaped by capital in this really direct way. And you just have to ask yourself, like, who is this for? Whose gain is this for? This is not for me. They're not building any housing I could ever afford. They're not building housing any of my neighbors could ever afford. They're building it to speculate, right? They're building it to speculate, to abstract, to profit, you know? And so to me, there's a through line from that to the library around the corner, which is one of the libraries they tried to close in the Coalition to Save the Libraries, which is the zine project you're referring to. Helped actually to save my library right on the corner, you know, two blocks from the site I'm speaking of, you know, and there's a direct through line between that and Palestine and the library, you know, and it's all privatization, private property, the enclosure of the commons. Yeah, I am like always interested in how you like, I always think of it as like constellating, like how you like, because, you know, like a constellation is actually formed by the lines we draw between fixed points. Right? Like that's what gives us the meaning of a constellation. So if we draw, as we draw the lines between these things, we're not attempting to conflate them and say like Palestine is real estate is libraries, but we're attempting to show the similarities between them in an attempt to like sort of build this web of association that is also a web of solidarity, ideally.
You mentioned enclosure and the commons. Maybe you could just expand on that a bit. There will be some people listening who don't know what you're referring to. But in drawing that out a bit, maybe just also you could include a bit about how common space and practices that develop in those spaces has been important to you as an artist.
Yeah. You know, I'm certainly not the foremost expert on the commons, you know. And I, you know, obviously would refer people to Sylvia Federici's work and Calvin and the Witch, which has been a big influence in that. But just thinking of these, you know, and the enclosure of the commons is a specific reference to, I believe, like 17th century England, right? When we're talking about like the common land that people were allowed to graze upon. And one of my big inspirations politically has been the Diggers and Winstanley, who are the people who stood up and opposed and settled on the commons. They're kind of, in very many ways, like a very direct ancestor to, say, like the Occupy movement, you know, I think consciously so. you know, and they're the original communists, that the original people who are like, or, you know, whatever, we can find through lines of that strain of thinking throughout human history, but like, you know, who are like, oh yeah, the land belongs to all, it's a common treasury, as Winston Stanley would say. Yeah, and to me that's like a really central idea in a lot of the work that I do, but it's also to me a central idea in human history, this idea that there's always going to be these things, you know. And you can look at the same thing with like the colonization of North America, right? Like, you know, many indigenous peoples had very different ideas of like their relationship to the land, you know. It wasn't thought of as these like parcels that could be bought and sold. And to me that abstraction of you know, taking something as direct as the land upon which we live, our homes, and turning it into a commodity and entering it into the market, which has these really demented ideas of value, that are really far divorced from like the things that we think of when we think of home, like security and stability and comfort and love and sharing and joy and like a space to welcome others into, you know, putting those into this, the language and the logic of commodities, to me is like just the most debased thing you could ever possibly do.
Well, in that, I just wanted to draw out a project that you mentioned, which I have the zine for, which was the Coalition to Save Public Libraries in Philly. And you can correct the specific name, but basically this effort to mobilize around public libraries. Some people will know, of course, sort of, and have a clear experience also of how important libraries are. But maybe you could describe this project and how it relates to some of the ideas that you were just talking about in regards to the commons, and why it was important for you as an artist to engage with that.
Yeah, so happy to. My little caveat I always give is like, I'm horrible with dates. So anytime I say any date, people should be like, assume that it's a 5-year range within that, and double check my work. But I believe it was in, I want to say, 2008, under the Nutter administration here in Philadelphia. So it was like during the global recession, and then there was like a lot of austerity budgets happening across the world. And so the Mayor Nutter threatened to close 11 branch libraries. And it was this really beautiful moment. I wasn't super involved in it. I would go to some of the demonstrations. But I wasn't, you know, I had friends who were much more involved in the space at the time. But this beautiful, like, multiracial, multi-class, multi-neighborhood coalition popped up to save the libraries. So it was called the Coalition to Save the Libraries. And I was watching this happen. I had a lot of friends who were closely involved in this. And it was really remarkable because Philly, like a lot of American cities, can be very segregated, both in terms of the socialization of folks of different ethnic backgrounds, but also Philly is kind of maybe uniquely like a city of small neighborhoods. Like, it's, I always say it's a bunch of little villages all stuck together. Like, people tend not to leave their neighborhoods. Each neighborhood has its own downtown. People really identify with their like section of the city they live in, like, more intensely than, say, Montreal, in my experience of living in Montreal. And just to see something like this that was like really affecting the city as a whole, and to see people respond to as a whole, as a city, from below, and actually manage to save these 11 branches from the cutting block, to me that was really remarkable. And it was really like a real people power. And you saw, you know, all these like queer anarchists from West Philly, where I live, a lot of whom were like friends of mine, and punks, like working with folks who were very involved in their neighborhood branch libraries, some of whom were a bit older, and who were very rooted in those neighborhoods, and then build something like that. So really build like kind of like a federated system for this, where people who are involved in saving their own branch would all come together and save the system as a whole. And that to me was really remarkable, both in terms of being able to successfully fight the defunding of common space, but also just as a model for that form of organizing. So the project that I did came about as a result of an invitation from a project from the city's mural arts program with curator Phoebe Bachman, called the People's Budget Office. So it's an annual project. I think they're doing it again. I've done it a few years now, where different artists kind of do different interventions into the city's budgeting process. And so as someone who's always been deeply interested in people's histories, I was like, when I was asked to do something as part of that, I was thinking like, oh, it'd be really cool to do like a history of when people actually won, when people actually were able to successfully intervene into the city's budget, because the budget often feels like this thing that's really far away from you and that that it's really hard to have any impact on. So be able to actually fight austerity. I just wanted to tell that kind of success story, you know?
Well, it is a huge success story to block the cancellation and closure of public libraries in Philadelphia. And it's really a story that I learned about through the zine that you made. So, you know, it's also illustrates also how art can sort of carry these very local stories and embody them in a way, or, you know, one take on these experiences. There is a connection here towards what priorities are in society. And I mentioned before the way that you have told stories like this one, or spoken to issues that are both local and global. You know, one, you know, very sort of direct framing of opposition to the current Israeli war on the people of Gaza has been that in the context of the United States, that billions of dollars are sent to arm the Israeli state's military and is not being used for things like libraries or education or healthcare. And often that question is sort of thrown aside by invoking the complexities of how these funding structures work. But the reality is that that money is not going towards public institutions that are not, you know, simply framed by markets. So maybe in building on this project that you mentioned, if you could sort of build out and talk about the local and the global, and also maybe about why, as an artist in Philadelphia, you recently have done some work about Palestine.
I mean, I think just as a human, right? Like, you know, like it's just hard to watch this scale of atrocity being committed with, you know, my tax dollars, with all of my neighbors' tax dollars, to, you know, engage in the wholesale extermination of another people. To watch, you know, if anyone, you know, has watched any of the footage coming out of there of just the widespread devastation that the Israeli state is currently wreaking. It's, yeah, like, how can you not cry out, right? Like, you just would have to be completely desensitized to not want to do something about that. You know, I think for me, honestly, a lot of what I've been doing around that has been, you know, donating work to auctions, showing up at protests, like, doing some other stuff, just as a body, you know, or just as like a human, not as an artist so much. A lot of the work, honestly, that's been of mine that's been mobilized in that way is actually very old. And so it's work that was made in, I believe, 2004. So I made this series called The 10 Plagues of the Occupation at the invitation of a group of Jewish theater artists, who was Deb Cheval was the director, it was Liberty Cabbage Theater Revival, who kind of came out of this world of like post Bread and Puppet and like kind of punk rock DIY theater. And they were doing a piece called An Olive on the Seder Plate that was specifically geared towards speaking to other Jewish folks about Palestine. And they would like tour at the synagogues. It was very like an edutainment, to borrow like an old phrase from KRS-One, like kind of thing, you know? And they really had a very specific idea of who their audience was and how they were trying to move them around that. So I had shared a bill at a puppetry festival with some of these folks, and then they were like, I had to respond, well, I was doing this very heavy-handed work called The Other 9/11 that, like, in 2002, like, that was, like, kind of, like, talking about the coup in Chile. It was not my best work by a long shot, but there was something in that that they liked and responded to, and then invited me to create work for this. And so they were using the phrase of the 10 plagues or a visit upon the Egyptians to talk about all the things that the Israeli state was visiting upon Palestinians. So there was like a, they gave me a list of bullet points. So it was, you know, the lack of access to water, lack of access to education, checkpoints, lack of access to healthcare, the destruction of olive groves, stuff like that. And I made these kind of simple black and white things that were made for projection and then were also made into a series of prints. As an aside, I always use this as my story of like how you never know the impact that your work is going to have, because with a bill that we shared, there was literally like five people in the audience. We had traveled all the way out from Detroit to Philadelphia to do this show, and like no one was there at all, and it was like totally disheartening. But one of those people was Deb Chaval, and then she invited me to create work for this show, and then that work has really traveled far and wide. And you know, like just recently I redesigned a bunch of that work very slightly and added some text and stuff, and it's become the covers for this international series, this series of international punk compilations that are benefits for mutual aid in Gaza. So I haven't made a ton of new work about Palestine other than a simple paper cut of Aaron Bushnell, because I was really moved by that and been interested in the act of self-immolation as a protest for a long time. It's both heartening and disheartening, right, simultaneously, to see this old work be redeployed in that way. And then the other work I've done around this is just as a member of Just Seeds. We have a graphics page where we do free downloadable graphics, you know, that people can print out and use for protests, use for anything they want, as long as it's not for profit. And I'm one of the committee of folks who administers that project. So a lot of the work I actually do for Palestine is uploading and resizing people's JPEGs. You know, very quote, boring quotidian work, you know. I found I haven't, like many people, I think the work I'm doing these days, maybe if it references Palestine, it references it a little more obliquely. I think a lot of more people have been moved to make more direct work on that topic, and I just try to support those people doing that work. Myself, I find it a little too crushing, you know, to like really spend too long dwelling there, you know.
Well, that underlines one important element to your work, Eric, which is how much time you put into it. A lot of your work is paper cuts, and it's done very delicately. It's an interesting point to consider how much like physical relationship you have to your work in a time when so much graphic work is done online, including excellent work. I just wanted to note, you mentioned Aaron Bushnell, who is a U.S. soldier who, in protest to the Israeli attack on Palestine and Gaza specifically, took his own life as an act of protest and lit himself on fire outside of the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. last year. You talked about being moved on a human level about what's happening in Palestine. And you were able to very quickly make that connection between your work and, you know, your participation, of course, as a person in these protests. But you made a bunch of jumps there that I feel like punk rock probably really played a role in educating you culturally and politically. You know, a lot of people struggle to make those connections, right? And a lot of sort of like punk rock critique of the sort of colonial capitalist system, you know, shorthand would be fuck the system, is really important in terms of like being able to quickly see through a lot of smoke screens that are put up that actually do work and make people hesitant to engage with a bunch of really consequential issues. So I would imagine that punk culture also played an important role in terms of your own practice. I'm sure there's many other influences, but yeah, if you have any reflections on that and any points.
Yeah, I mean, that obviously was a huge thing for me growing up, especially as like a teen in my early 20s. I was very involved in the punk hardcore scene in Michigan. And, you know, very involved. I was, you know, a part of it. You know, I think for me it was interesting because it kind of developed really simultaneously to the values and to the politics. You know, I think when I was like a teenager, I discovered the two volume set of Emma Goldman's Living My Life at the library in my high school, and became really obsessed with those. And then right around that same time, a friend of mine had gone away to visit colleges and had gone to Antioch and brought back this copy of this anarchist paper called Disconnection. And on the back of that, a list of like contemporary anarchist spaces. And I at the time had begun to consider myself an anarchist as like a 16-year-old kid, you know, and was like, but I had like this kind of self-consciously anachronistic way of thinking of that. Like I was thinking of myself, putting myself outside of time to some degree by saying that, you know, being like, I'm going to look back to this thing that feels very utopian and very distant and align myself with it the way a lot of kids do, you know? And then I didn't realize how there was like this living community around that politic. And so then he brought back this list, and one of the places was a place called the Trumbullplex in Detroit. And I was living in the suburbs of Detroit at the time. And so then when I went to do my high school government report, I was like, oh, can I do something on that? They wanted me to do this like report on a governmental institution. And I was like, well, I'm anti-government. Can I do something on an anti-governmental institution? And I think the teacher was just like, whatever, you actually care about this assignment? Sure, you know? So I went out and interviewed the Trumbullplex folks and then ended up moving in there like a year later when I turned 18. And that was a place that had a lot of punk shows, you know, and they had a lot of hardcore shows. Like a big one for me, I always remember, was Los Crudos. That was the time when they were really active. And for anyone who doesn't know, Los Crudos is this amazing, I think primarily Spanish language, right? Like hardcore band from Chicago. And they were always like, we would always compare it to going to church, because Martin, the front guy of that band, would always like give these huge and passionate, beautiful speeches, like denouncing homophobia, calling for global solidarity, decrying capitalism, you know, and really would weave all these things together. And everyone was just so moved by it. And then they'd play like a, you know, like a minute and a half long, like short burst of like hardcore, you know, and that was really big for me, like just seeing that community and being a part of it.
That was a conversation with Eric Ruin, who is a community engaged artist based in Philadelphia. Thank you so much to Eric for being on this edition of Free City Radio. My name is Stefan Christoph. I host and produce Free City Radio, which airs weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM at 11 a.m. on Wednesdays, on CJLO 1690 a.m., also in Geoghegan, Montreal on Wednesdays at 8:30 a.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM on Tuesdays at 8 a.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario at 11:30 a.m. on Wednesdays, on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, BC on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. and Saturdays at 7:30 a.m. on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto at 5:30 a.m. on Fridays, on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. and now broadcasting in Vancouver on CJSF on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m. That's at 90.1 FM. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We're also a podcast. Look us up. Just search Free City Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll speak next week. I'm Stefan Christoph. Take care.